Welcome to Couch Chats with Corey and Courtney, a podcast about getting local Kansas City artists on the couch to chat. Hello, 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 and welcome to Couch Chats with Corey and Courtney.
Hello.
I'm Corey.
I'm Courtney.
And today on the show, we have our good friend, Bradley J. Thomas. Welcome to the show, Bradley.
Hello.
Hello. Hey. I have been wanting to have this conversation with Bradley for a while.
It's true. It's true.
He's been a household name at the asylum for a few years, and we have been talking about you. And so finally, Courtney and I were like, this is our moment to get to know you. So welcome.
Sorry, my moment of, I was trying to figure out this whole time. I'm like, when did I meet you? But it just occurred to me right now. So we'll talk about it. I was like, I know now.
So the first question we always ask is, Bradley, how the fuck did you get to the couch today?
Oh, that's a long and drawn-out story. There's I drove.
Yeah. He's a comedian, ladies and gentlemen. But part of this section is also, within telling that story, often we get a little bit of background about you. So feel free to fill in as much as you'd like.
I moved to Kansas City in 2007. That was in June. I auditioned for my first show 15 days later. And that was Jekyll and Hyde with Thin Air Theatrics.
There we go. And that was
cool. But
that's where I met you.
Exactly. That's where I also met Nick Utoff, who was my first friend in Kansas City.
Awesome.
And we are still friends to this day. Not as close, but he's also getting married, so lucky him. So I moved here with someone, and her job moved us out here, and then in 2009, she left me for her boss, who made a high six figures, which I don't fault. Because
you were like, I can't compete with that.
Yeah, money's good. There you go. Take the money. And
where did you move from?
Portland, Oregon.
Great.
Where I had originated my career and everything. And then I decided to stay because I found that I really just enjoyed Kansas City. And actually, Kansas City's theatrical makeup, as well as like just cultural makeup, was similar to Portland. And I was just like, okay, I can make sense of this. It's a market that I can make sense of. Mm-hmm. And then just stayed and have been here ever since.
That's awesome. Did you, are you from Portland originally?
I'm from Portland originally. Well, actually, I was born in Dayton, Ohio. I moved to Portland when I was 2 months old. And actually, Beaverton, Oregon. Shout out to Beaverton. but a suburb of Portland. And grew up there, started my career there. Started performing at age 4. Just doing small things and commercial work to kind of make money because I grew up kind of lower income. And then from there, I went to college. I have to give a shout out to my mentor, James Erickson, who was the theater director of Beaverton High School, which was the third best high school theater program from the 70s to 99.
Well, all right. Did you always know that you sort of wanted to do, like, theater? Obviously you started at a young age. How did you land up in, like, performance in that? Did your parents push you into that, or is that something that you sort of were interested in?
Something I sort of was interested in. Even before the first show I did, I was always singing, moving about, making voices, trying to make people laugh. It just sort of fit. And then, from about the age of 5 to 12, was acting primarily to make money in commercials and things like that. But also trying to find what kind of interested me about theater, about film. Took a lot of, like, dance classes, movement classes, mime classes, puppeteering, just to kind of find my way. When I hit high school was when my mentor was like, you have things that other people can't do, and I'd like you to continue to do this, but let's focus on singing, acting, and dancing as your primary things. Everything else can kind of follow you in terms of that.
Amazing that you had a mentor that sort of pushed you that way. That's awesome.
And I was lucky and fortunate that he saw in me something that he only saw in, like, people that actually have moved on to be in kind of the upper echelon of theatrical performance. Brooks Ashmanskas was through our program. Shoshana Bean, also through our program.
Love her.
She's wonderful. She was actually my first kiss. We were in Head Start, which is a pre-kindergarten. Her mom gives me grief about this anytime I'm back in Portland and anytime I see her. She had a crush on me. I had a crush on a girl named Wendy Shimshack.
How's Wendy doing?
I don't talk to her. I don't talk to Shoshana, but I don't talk to her at all. She kissed me in a cubby, and I was like, ew, you're gross. And then, you know, flash forward 2 decades, and it's right. Like,
you're telling you're never Shoshana fucking I kissed Shoshana. Yeah, I kissed Shoshana. Right.
And her mom still, she still gives her grief because I guess up until like 5th grade, she still was like, this guy is really cute. I'm like,
okay. You are really cute, probably.
No. Especially not back then. I looked like a thin, like brown Q-tip. I was like, yeah, giant-headed man, yeah. Now I've filled out a little bit more, so I'm just like, now I'm just like, you know, a packet of cotton balls. I'm
just like, yeah. However you want to self-describe to our listeners who have no idea what
I'm very self-deprecating, like. I'm sorry.
No, that's insane. So you came to Kansas City?
Yeah.
And you worked on your first kind of show, Jekyll, and that's how you two met?
Yeah.
Around that time, I think you probably auditioned for Altar Boys, maybe, give or take? Is that...
That was...
Eight? Nine?
Eight? Nine. Because that was... everything started to, like, gear up and was great, and then the breakup happened, and it just deflated everything. And I was just like, okay... And I had to take, I took a year off, and I was actually cast in Ultra Boys, and was really looking forward to it. In fact, I was cast in 3 shows at that time. Ultra Boys, another one that I don't think ended up happening, and a living room show. Mm-hmm. And I dropped out of all three. It was the first time I had ever dropped out of a show in, you know, at that point in time, a 20-year career. And I was just like, oh, okay.
But I'm glad that you took some time for yourself, though.
Yeah.
I mean...
I am as well, but I had to, at that point in time, again, restarted my career. Because I took a year. Like, and it was... I didn't do anything. Like, I didn't do readings. I didn't do charity work. I just kind of sat in my house and was like, okay. And the other problem was, I was like... She broke up with me over the phone while she was in England after I'd just gotten back from visiting her 4 days after my birthday.
Oh,
and I was just like, okay. And the reason why she knew I was awake, the reason why she knew I was awake was because I was sending her pictures of her animals because she said she was homesick. Uh-huh. And she was like, oh, you're awake. We need to talk. I was like,
oh.
And then she was still in England for another 4 months. So I was taking care of her animals by myself. And I was just like, okay, great. So I did a lot of reevaluating. I lost, actually, a lot of weight during that time, which I've kind of repurposed in my body at the moment. and actually, I think came out better than I was. And a little stronger in terms of both performance as well as... having something like that to pull from. Like, I've had tragedy throughout my life, but that was a different sort of beast.
Mm-hmm. Is it too Disney to be like, well, at least it brought you to us? I mean, you know, that idea of all of that insanity is maybe why you're sitting on the couch today. So I'd like to thank your ex from England for bringing you to Kansas City so we could have these chats.
Exactly.
But fuck that shit. Right. I'm like breaking up with you over a phone from England now. So listen to that. Bradley was cast in a show that Altar Boys, which was kind of the first show that Kevin Bogan and I sort of worked on together back in that day. And that was...
Was that the one at City Stage?
Mm-hmm.
With Steven?
Yeah. Okay. That was the first time ever in an audition room where I was given the ability to deny casting to someone because I didn't want to work with them. Oh. So that is kind of a pivotal moment sort of in a little bit of my career where finally I was able to look in a room and say, I don't have to take everyone, and there's actually someone in this room who I don't want to work with. Like, you know, where I had a conversation with Bogan where I was just like, I won't be able to work on this project. And he was like, then we throw that resume out. You know, that person was not in the room. And I, so that show was a pivotal sort of part in my head of having someone sort of trust in me what my decision making was. So,
well, and it's very founded. You make great decisions.
You're here. I sat at a table for Jesus Christ Superstar the same way. And and I learned a little bit about how, like, Kyle likes to cast shows through that process as well. And I will say that to any of our actor listeners out there. Like, if you may be one of the most talented mofos in that room, but if the room does not want to work with you, you will not make it.
Well, people forget. I mean, I don't think people realize that it, yes, has to do with talent and what you're, you know, if
there's Soprano
or
Rialto
or whatever, you know, those
sorts of
things.
Everything is equal.
But in a, you know, 7-week process, if I don't want to spend time with you, you probably aren't going to get the role. You know.
And it shows the people like yourself who whenever, who, you know, we were talking about you, we were like, fuck yeah. Like, Bradley J is in this show. He, and more, he wants to work with us. Like, that was what a cool part of that conversation was. So we're really glad to have you on the other side of the wall, working on that Jesus show.
Yay. Yay, we're so excited for this show.
I know, and that is one of the reasons why Bradley is on the show. If you're just tuning in, we are talking with Bradley J. Thomas. He is currently a member of the Jesus Christ Superstar Company, because we cannot give names yet. Eventually, those names will be released, but it's kind of cool how there's some people who still have no idea.
Who do not know, and I love that.
We were at a birthday party for myself on Monday.
Happy birthday, by the way.
Thank you. I am 34, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right.
Here we are.
Yesterday.
It is a new year. We are recording this on September 11th, which is always a crazy time. The day after my birthday, I'm always like, yay, yesterday was so fun. Dead day today. So sad.
What do you remember what celebrating your birthday was like before September 11th?
I always typically, like, from all I can remember, had a rehearsal, like, the day afterward because of, like, how this falls, and especially because it had to do with, like, academia and stuff.
Sure.
There was usually always a rehearsal that I had to go to the next day. So my birthday was always sort of brushed over, but post September 11th, there's always conversation the next day. Where were you, Bradley, on September 11th?
I was actually in Longview, Washington, and was asleep at the time with my college girlfriend. And we, her mom came in and, like, pounded on the door, and she was like, you guys gotta wake up and see this. Because we were on the West Coast, so it was And we came out, and we were watching, and it was right before the second tower got hit. And it was just like, what is happening? This isn't real. This isn't real.
It was there's nothing.
I can't believe
explain.
Our generation has one of them. I mean, I know every generation has their where were you moments, but I mean, I know exactly where I was.
Yeah.
It's we have a high school program here, and I was talking with the teachers yesterday, and one of the teachers was in New York at the time, and this is a hard day for her. And so I was offering to teach. I said, you know, I can come in. I can, you know, figure out. I'll do whatever you need me to do. And and that's not funny at all, but I was like, you know, it'll be fine. We can just do, like, 9/11 reflections and this kind of stuff. We'll do some journaling. We'll do, you know, this. And then I was like, these high school students weren't alive.
No.
Yeah.
That's insane for me to, like, comprehend. And Alex did sleep through the whole thing because he and I were together at the time. And I got up to go to class, to go to college. And I couldn't figure out, like, I hadn't turned on the TV or anything. I was running late. I hop in the car. I turn on the radio and, like, nothing. I was like, what's happening? Am I stuck on AM? Like, what's going on? Because I had an ancient car that I started with scissors at the time. it was terrible.
Yes.
And I couldn't figure out what was happening. Because my radio was also controlled with a nickel. I had jammed into, like, the turn knob thing. It was real classic.
So you needed a new car.
So I needed a new car. And then I was like, maybe I should listen to what's happening. And that was right before the second tower was hit. I think that's pretty much like every... Because I think that everybody thought the first one was a fluke. Something that happened.
A tragic accident.
Yeah.
Right.
Because it had happened, what, 3 years prior to that?
Right.
That the Cessna went into it and was like, okay, this happens.
Yeah.
And then that second one.
Yeah.
Because everyone had turned on their TVs. So, so many people
were watching
saw that second one.
And it was just, it's just the...
I mean, I was literally one of the paranoid kids who went home that night and was too scared to go to bed because for some reason I thought a plane was going to crash into my house.
In your house,
like, I really did think that that I was like, well, anything's possible. I just saw on TV.
Right.
Two planes and, you know, if not more, because Pentagon and other, I mean, all of those things. Like, that was insane.
Well, and then just the towers going down.
Going down was
this. Looked like a movie.
Yeah. Well,
still does.
Yeah, it still does. Mm-hmm. And that's, we won't get into that, but that's,
That's a lovely conspiracy movie that I've watched about things, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Loose Change and
Loose Change is the things one like that. About.
Yeah, I'm like, I kind of took a hard when I was younger, back, you know, like 10 years ago, I kind of took a hard line of like, I don't think this thing happened the way that the official statement. I don't believe, and I still don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially now, knowing how many things can just be lied about and, moved. We watch it happen.
Yeah. Well, and with the current regime, I'm just like, what? How is this not a thing now?
Uh-huh. Right.
Like, this is just ridiculous. And the amount of violence in the world right now, I'm just like, this is something that could conceivably be as bad as we think it could be. Absolutely. As bad as.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a good thing.
No.
It's not a good thing.
No.
So instead we do musical theater.
Yes.
That's right.
Yes. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, about, you know, hanging up a dude and another dude just swinging.
It's,
it's
going to be intense. This will be a tangent into that. You know, I always talked about post 9/11, you know, sort of what the art was going to be that came out of that. You know, because as you get further and further away, you know, I think there was a play that the Coterie did, which was like stories from 9/11 that I think they did maybe 5 or 6 years ago. Like some of that art. And so I actually am interested in sort of the art that's going to come out of our current regime, if you will. The same way that we're doing Jesus Christ Superstar, which is based upon a societal, event that supposedly took place, you know, and then what took place around there. You know, whether, I think maybe you said it in our pre-interview that we had about Jesus Christ Superstar, just about how, like, these people were real people.
Yeah.
Maybe their magic wasn't as magical, but these characters were at least listed somewhere.
Yeah.
And you're in it. I mean, according to when this airs, we will be 1 week
from first preview. Yeah.
Because this will air on Thursday of this week. So you, I mean, I know you're used to quick schedules and shows, but it's kind of crazy that first preview is in a week.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
It simultaneously feels like we've been working on it for 2 years, which we have.
Yeah.
And also 2 days. Like, it's, you know what, it's both at the same time where I'm just like, we've been talking about it for so long, and oh, holy shit.
And now it's happening!
Holy shit! Here we go. Yeah.
What's the buzz? It is happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so tell our listeners a little bit about some of the fun roles that you got to do in different theaters in Kansas City.
In Kansas City? Well, yeah. I did, last year, I did The Beatle and Sweeney Todd at the KC Rep.
Great show. We took our high school students to see that, and they loved that.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And that was a show I really enjoyed performing for the young audiences.
Yeah.
Because it's not something that's, I mean, some of them may have seen the version of, like, you know, the movie version with Johnny Depp.
Right. Yeah.
But in terms of, like, actually getting Sondheim, they don't get a lot of. I mean, Kansas City doesn't get a lot of it.
Yeah.
We were there, one of the audiences in the talkback was a group of kids that traveled, like, 4 or 5 hours that day just to see that show and had never been to a theater before or seen a theater show, and they came to the Rep to see Sweeney Todd. And I just remember us all being like, you don't know how, that is so cool that you guys got to see that. Because, I mean, I think all of Kansas City was rooting for you, Bradley. That role was really good
for
you.
It was amazing.
You were so good in that. I think, and not that people weren't paying attention to you before, but definitely I remember hearing your name post that, people speaking about, oh, that's someone I need on my stage. And we talked about that too. Like, not to, like, put you on the spot, but, like, we were just like, that was so fun to see him take on that track.
It's always good to play, you know, a very delicious bad guy.
Yeah.
And one that is just, like, both insanely, like, laughing 1 minute and then maniacally beating someone the next. Mm-hmm. It's just like, okay, it's, you know, it's the Joker mentality.
Yeah.
Of, like, you are dangerously fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You know, Pennywise is a good example of someone who's dangerously fun. You want to be like, you are gross and disturbing because you are a clown.
You are a clown.
But you can also just chew my face off.
Have you seen the second chapter of It yet?
I have. It is good to great, not great.
Yeah. Okay. Did you read the book?
Yes.
Good.
And I'm glad that certain things are not...
removed from it?
Yes. But they've also added some very texturally bizarre things, especially at the beginning, that it's just like, oh, God. This is...
Did I see a funny thing trending yesterday or something that like Pennywise is homophobic or something?
Yes.
Did you see that? And I was like, our death-eating clown is homophobic. Yeah, probably.
Probably. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I think he's phobic of people.
Yeah.
I just loves little children. Come on.
I was so shocked that I saw it. I think it was maybe Andy Chambers or something that shared that. And I was like, I don't necessarily think Pennywise is picking on the homo children, but I'm sure he's not leaving them.
Yeah,
out.
I don't know if a serial killing clown is what we need on our side.
No,
some people where you're like, it's fine.
What an ally. You know, it's Pennywise.
You know, it'd be like if Mitch McConnell was like, I'm just gonna wear a rainbow flag.
Right.
And we'd be like,
no,
cannot.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
You cannot wear that rainbow flag.
No.
Put your turtle head back in your thing and just go away.
Didn't someone leave Trump's cabinet yesterday? Was that my birthday
His
gift?
Fifth security
John
advisor?
John Bolton?
Uh-huh.
The walrus guy? Yeah.
Yeah.
I woke up yesterday and my husband said that. He was just like, this is your birthday gift from the cabinet.
From the cabinet.
You lost someone.
It's okay.
You got to play the Beatle a year ago. All right.
Yeah. I just actually closed a production of Mamma Mia.
Mm-hmm. You sure did with Pageant Productions.
With Pageant Productions. Mm-hmm. I got to work with one of my best friends, Katie Gilchrist. Mm-hmm. She co-directed that as well as played Donna. I got to be Harry Bright, so I got to be British, which 90% of the time I am British. And I got to wear a Speedo.
You sure did. And from where I was sitting, talk about immersion seating.
There you go.
Hello.
There you go. Yes.
We all, our whole audience saw Bradley that evening. Took a chance on me. All right. But that was actually a lot of fun. We had a good group of people there that night that we saw that, and you definitely got us up off of our feet dancing.
Yeah, cool.
And the big group picture at the end, I'm always game for. Like, I think every show like that, at that fun caliber, should have that moment where everyone can sort of jump up and take that big cast photo. Because that space really isn't big enough to hang out afterward either. Like, to really... That was at Prohibition Hall. Pageant kind of moves around, but I think Prohibition is sort of his home base.
That's going to be the home base,
for a lot of...
A lot of his productions now, including, I think, Rocky's going to be its permanent living space.
Mm-hmm.
Evil Dead's going to be its permanent living space.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear talk that Mamma Mia may be coming back as an annual event as well.
Yeah, fun.
So
here
I may
go again.
Break out my Speedo yet again. Mm-hmm. To
yearly.
Yearly. Mm-hmm. Hopefully with less padding around the... Speedo itself.
That's what we're talking
about. Right? Or more. Who knows?
It depends. You are getting older, so we'll see.
I am getting older. As
he likes
40,
to remind us of those.
40 approaches, I'm like, I don't...
How old are you, 39?
I'm 39. I'll be 40 February 3rd.
Great.
It's not that bad. Just turned 40.
Yeah, it's not that bad. I just... I have looked 40 now for about 40. 4 years.
Yeah.
I'm like, And it's because I stopped dyeing my hair because I was growing it out and then shaved my head for a one-off Buffalo Room production of the Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Mm-hmm.
I had shoulder-length hair by that time. And then I grew it out again, and they really just put my hair in a ponytail and chopped off the ponytail for Sweeney Todd.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, this is not, I'm growing it out for a thing that may or may not happen, and then hasn't happened yet, but will, right? Yeah, it will.
What's going to happen?
Hopefully be in Hamilton, even though I had a very wonderful April Fool's joke.
You did.
That tricked a lot of people.
It really did. We all were with you.
And it was a feasible thing. That's the best part about any practical joke or April Fool's joke. It has to be feasible. It can't just be like, aliens are coming. which works, you know, during Halloween. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you, H.G. Wells. And thank you,
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
War of the Worlds. It's great.
Mm-hmm. It scared the shit out of a nation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
So I posted on Facebook that I had been cast in Hamilton as Alexander Hamilton. Mm-hmm. Posted my headshot, posted the Hamilton picture from Chicago, and then posted a ticket link from Ticketmaster.
Oh my god.
Which made everyone was like, this is real. Oh, and a friend of mine, Victor Ritter Wexler, who's a local actor, a big time actor in both Hollywood as well as here, still believed it up until coming to see a show at the Living Room. Mm-hmm. And was like, I'm getting my tickets. Like, I'm booking my tickets. I'm like, oh, Victor, this is like 3 months later. And I'm like,
yeah.
Buddy, no, that was a joke. Uh-huh. Thank you. And then proceeded to talk about it. And every time I see him now, he's just like, I'm still not over that.
Right.
Okay. Well, great. Then that's
are goals. You going to be in Hamilton? Is this your release? Is this the big moment?
This is it. Yes, I'm going to be. No. Fingers crossed. I've sent a myriad of self-tapes over the span of the past few years, and I've gotten very favorable responses, but at certain points of time they've not fallen my way yet. I need to make it up to Chicago in order to actually do the in-person stuff.
But it's also fun, like, the people who are sort of sitting in your area of that, and then, like, one day they will get a phone call that says, come here, and they're like, I have to drop everything.
Yep.
To go fly up to maybe do an audition or a callback or a reading or something. Mm-hmm. I hope you do get it, because then that'll be two people from Hamilton who have sat on this couch.
Right. That'd be wonderful.
Mm-hmm. I need that. You need that.
I need that.
You need that.
And I had a similar situation. Well, actually, in 2004, The Lion King, Disney's The Lion King, was auditioning in Seattle, and I was like, you know what? I had a Sunday night show at a dinner theater that I was working at, and I was like, I'm going to go up. The auditions were Monday, and so I drove all night, which is only like 3 hours, but it stayed in my car, and then did the auditions, and they were like, like 300 people were at the cattle call. Mm-hmm. They kept six of us for the rest of the day, just reading, singing, reading, singing, reading, singing, and they were like, we'll give you a call. Around about 3 weeks later, I got a call going, you need to come down to San Diego tomorrow and audition for the Powers That Be. Mm-hmm. This is kind of one of those like guarantee-ish type situations, mm-hmm. as long as you can make it down. Oh, okay. Well, I can't. I'm actually in show, and this is like a Thursday night.
Yeah.
I'm like,
right.
I'm in show and I can't. And they're like, okay.
Moving on.
Bye.
Wow.
Like,
yeah.
All right. I've had so many near misses in my career, from the Twilight series to Leverage on TNT to Disney's Aladdin. Not the film or the film, the original 92 situation. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, I used to tell that story a lot, and
tell it now.
Okay, so I was 11, and my music teacher had connections to Disney, and Disney was looking for somebody to be a sound-alike for the guy that they had cast as the speaking voice of Aladdin, because mm-hmm. he couldn't sing. Mm-hmm. It's not that he couldn't sing, it's just he couldn't sing.
Mm-hmm. He couldn't sing.
He couldn't sing.
He was great on Full House.
He was
great on Full House. Right. And was a nice guy. I got the chance to meet him. So we, on a like a reel-to-reel recorder, recorded me singing something. It was like, This Land Is Your Land or something like mm-hmm. that. And she sent it to her friend. And this is one of the first times that Disney was like outsourcing. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like a competition. So they ended up flying, this is the first time I ever flew, they flew my dad and myself down to Buena Vista to audition and to sing and read. And it was me and about 1,500 other applicants. that just got whittled down over the course of a week and a half, whittled down to 10. And I was one of them. I was the youngest one there that got kept. And so they gave us one jump ahead reprise, and Aladdin's Part of a Whole New World. Mm-hmm. And recorded One Jump Ahead. They liked it. Recorded the reprise. And they were like, you sound a little young. And they kept kind of coming back to that. And then they had me sing A Whole New World. And sang through it, recorded it. They took it someplace. Then they pared it down to just 5 of us. And had us re-record everything. And then it got down to 3 of us. Myself, Brad Kane, and another gentleman who, I can't remember who it was, but I think he went on to be a Mouseketeer. Mm. We recorded A Whole New World with Leah. Mm-hmm. And that was actually the first time I'd ever been in a recording studio with another person singing, mm-hmm. like, sure. opposite mm-hmm. tracks. Mm-hmm. Well, and it was my first time doing a lot of that shit. Well, I'm just like, I'm 11, I don't know what's going on.
It was probably one of the more silent times Courtney and I have ever been quiet on this show. Because I was into every second of that story. And I still am. Like, that is so cool.
It was a bizarre, like, thing. And recorded that with Leah, and she was like, you are just the most adorable little dude ever. And I'm just like, oh, he thinks so. Got to meet Robin Williams. Just fleetingly, he was like, hey, good job. Because he stood in the, couldn't see it. Like, he was standing in the back of the recording thing, mm-hmm. through the glass, and was like, you sound good. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay. And then it came down to, my dad and I were brought into a room, and it was like, we're going to go with the other Brad, which he ended up being wonderful, wonderfully talented performer. Like,
yeah.
And the sweetest guy at that point in time I, like, ever met.
But that's
like,
cool.
Yeah. And they were like, we will keep you in mind as long as you're still a minor. We will keep you in mind for a lot of the things that we have coming up. Mm-hmm. So ever so often, I would get a call from Disney going, hey, can you fly down on your own dime?
Right.
And be at this or be at that. I'm like, and my parents were like, no.
No.
Because we were... We didn't have the means to do so.
Right.
There were a couple of times, like the Mickey Mouse Club, the new Mickey Mouse Club, certain vocal things that they also gave us. They gave us a call when Return of Jafar happened, mm-hmm. because Brad was, I think, taken up by something else at the time. And then they didn't end up using the voice of Aladdin from the original.
Right.
So
right.
that guy could sing, and they were just like, okay, well.
And Disney really did sort of start doing that, you know, I would say probably 5 or 6 years after that, they started looking and trying to connect.
Find somebody
both,
that can sing.
You know,
yeah.
I always say they probably stopped it right after Mel Gibson, after they let Mel Gibson sing in freaking Pocahontas, and they were like, thanks. But I love, you know, that, like, Tangled or whatever, that Mandy Moore was able to be both of them.
Yeah.
Like, I just, when you get the opportunity to be both the voice actor and the singer,
absolutely.
I'm just glad that they do that.
Although, I kind of love the duality of singing voice versus speaking voice, because mm-hmm. I don't think we would have gotten as genuine of performances in, say, things like The Little Mermaid.
I knew you were going to say that.
Which segues into... Next summer, I'll be doing The Little Mermaid at Recovery.
Are you able to say who you are?
I think so.
I think you'll be a really good assistant.
Yes.
Yes.
I'm a manservant.
You are a manservant.
That's
I'm so excited for that show.
Yeah. Because
there's quite a few people from Superstar that mm-hmm. are going on.
I think
that.
There's 3 of you, right? For sure?
3 mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah.
Might be, who knows? Especially casting way out there.
But
you
I think
never
you
know what's going on.
And I think
tell me about it.
I think Delano is announced. So I think you.
Delano's announced.
Yes,
yeah,
so you two will
and,
be good.
And
Katie announced.
Katie announced.
Chris hasn't announced yet.
Chris doesn't announce anything.
He doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought I saw that he announced. I know,
but he only had to do that so he could, because the boys in the band. He had to tell me that he couldn't audition for that. And that means you can't either. So,
I know, I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. Yeah, Little Mermaid's going to be good.
Yeah.
Sure. I don't know who your Ariel is, but I know who a lot of people are.
Yeah, I don't know who that is either. I also don't know who the Triton / Chef Louis is. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling I know, but...
That's not JJ. Why is he... No, just kidding. JJ would be a great...
The chef.
The chef.
Yeah,
I guess. I would love to see him do that. Mm-hmm. I saw, I think, Jay Coombs do it earlier this year.
Oh.
He was good. He was silly fun.
Right. My oldest daughter's school is doing Little Mermaid this fall, so I believe she is going out for... either Flotsam or Jetsam.
Those would be the ones I'd love
really
to play.
Mostly because
yeah.
And she'll be able to do that.
Is LeBaron also doing Little Mermaid Jr. at that point in time as well?
I don't know about that one. It might. They might be doing it. They're not doing it here. It doesn't take place here.
Mm-hmm. They do their juniors off-site at Miege, I think.
Yeah, I don't... I did see that on their...
Because I think it's like at the exact same time. I'm like... It's a lot of Little Mermaid. But, I mean, there have been a lot of Mamma Mia at this point in time.
There
have
been a lot of Mamma Mias. I think I've seen it, like, 3 times in Kansas City in the last year.
And I think...
Between New Theater and then you guys and then the barn, for sure. I think they landed all in a year.
And then there's one up in Leavenworth that was, like, a weekend.
Was that Nino Cassisi's one? I don't know. I think that it was Nino's one. Yeah, there's quite a few. Yeah,
it's a fun show, though.
It's a fun show.
Is that what you have in between? Do you have anything between Jesus Christ Superstar and Little Mermaid?
I will be doing Christmas Carol at the Rep, seventh year, which is... Seventh year in a row.
Cool.
Which is a feat for a non-equity actor. I've been fortunate to work with, you know, my intro into the Rep was Kyle Hatley, who's directing... Superstar right now, and I've been fortunate after he left to work with other directors throughout, and again, this is a new director for it, Jason Chanos, and I've worked with Jason. Jason, I actually worked with Jason when he was Bob Cratchit in Carol, so it'll be nice to be on the opposite side of that instead of sharing the boards with them, you know, having them behind the footlights.
Yeah,
it's gonna be fun. I mean, Christmas Carol is a staple. It's fun.
Everybody loves it. Have you met Stuart yet? The new.
I've not met Stuart. We've talked briefly on the Book of Faces, but looking forward to meeting.
He'll be at JCS at some point. So
wonderful. He is lovely. I'm very excited for
Kansas City. I'm excited for Kansas City.
I need to text him.
We need to have him on the couch.
He's love. I'm so excited to see what he brings to the city. I think it's an amazing. And his wife is incredible, and his two little boys are the same age. Well, a little bit younger than Iz, so it'll be nice.
We love having
that. It's a wonderful addition to the city, the cityscape.
Is this the first time you've done Jesus Christ Superstar?
Yes, I've done several. You know, I've done Joseph 6 times, 6 different productions, including one in Germany. I've done Godspell twice, as John the Baptist / Judas both times. But this is the first time to hit on Andrew's wonderful opus. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is the one, in 2001, I had the opportunity to be in either Jesus Christ Superstar or Bye Bye Birdie. And at that point I chose Bye Bye Birdie because it sounded like it would be more fun. And it was a lot of fucking fun. I'm going to tell you that. It was a lot of fun. I loved, but at the exact same time, like 2 weeks later, then Jesus Christ Superstar opened. And I remember seeing it for the first time and just being like, what is this? Like, because, you know, of like the lack of books, you know, in it. And really having to like, the director of it has to have a thorough line or...
Right.
They're almost like, and they're already vignette scenes almost, but then if you don't have a connecting line, and that was the one thing I just remember seeing back then is it was like, I was like, that was not the best version of that I had seen. And I think that what you all are creating in that room has a definite through line, which is starting to become very apparent. Oh, you know, every time that we all as producers or whatever are starting to show up a lot more now just because the staging is sort of getting mm-hmm. done. And I mean, just the growth that is happening, I want people to see it.
Yes, it's going to be
there's at least three moments in the show that I'm like, that is show ready.
Yeah.
It's pretty close. And we're not even talking about the big moments. Like, there's just some other ones.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Come see it. Choose those immersion seats carefully, if you will. I will say that because you will have...
Bradley will not be in a Speedo for this production, but...
But if he was, we might be selling...
Or he will be. Georgiana's costumes are great. You never
right.
know.
That's right.
Well, if we could disclose your character name, maybe we could talk about what you might be wearing.
It might be an apt name. Who knows?
That's yeah. right. Oh my gosh.
Sorry.
Oh my.
Just edit that part out. All right.
No, we will not. That might be the title of your episode. Peter out, Peter in. Yeah. So that's funny. So with that, we now move into sort of like the actors' workshop questions of the day. So what is your definition of real magic?
Oh.
Right? He just drops that. Like it's no.
Something that you can quantifiably believe in that may or may not be real.
What is that? An example of that for you?
Music.
Music.
Mm-hmm.
What part of music is so magical?
The music can change your mood, can affect time,
mm-hmm.
can affect your stance on life. It can give you ideas. It can change your mind. It can build you up. It can remind you of where you come from.
The thing that I love about music is that it's universal. It's like math.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like everyone. Like you don't even have to have the words, but the music that you could play for someone. Mm-hmm. And I love, you know, that people use music for like Alzheimer's patients and stuff
yes.
like that.
Mm-hmm.
So like the ability that song and music can help connect things means that, to your point, there must be something magical about it. Because
mm-hmm.
if that's a tool that
yeah.
can be used for good... Awesome.
Yeah.
See? Nice.
And it
answer.
Can also be used for evil.
It can be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There are some songs that I can't listen to because of how they make me feel.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But also, if I want to rage out in a car, some of those are the music that I play. They are not the classical ballads, but from time to time, maybe Korn or Limp Bizkit.
You're not raging out to Whitney Houston. But
depending,
I want to dance with somebody!
I want to feel the heat with somebody. Yeah.
Yeah.
Magic.
Exactly. Oh, goodness. All right. You are a new addition to the crayon box. What color are you and why?
Really burnt sienna.
All right. Fair. Really burnt sienna.
Really,
really
that.
Burnt sienna.
That's fantastic.
I've always been a crayon that kind of... colored the wrong way, just so to speak. I've been kind of too dark to be white, too white to be dark. And so I'm just like one of those crayons that you look at and are like, I could use you, I just don't know how.
Well, as a crayon that you don't know how to use well, what's that like in Kansas City Theater? To be too white, too black, not authentic or whatever.
This business is rough. This business is rough for minorities. In general,
mm-hmm.
this business is for me rough, even rougher because of not knowing exactly what I am to fill those boxes with the crayon that I'm coloring with can be difficult when I color in a certain box and other people are like, that's not the box you should be coloring. You should be coloring over here. You should color outside the lines because you're you. And I'm like, well, yes, I'm me, but other people have a preset vision of what this color is and how to use the crayon. And I may or may not agree with that, but in this business, I kind of have to agree with...
Do you feel you're obligated to fill any crayon box?
Depending on the show, depending on the company.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest.
That was something the Barn Players sort of had an immersion talk group, and that was a subject that came up from one of them. Was a female that was there that said, I almost feel like, as a person of color, I have to audition for all of those, where somehow people are looking at me and saying, well, you're not auditioning, so evidently you don't want to be in that show. Or she, I believe, identified as Latina and said that often she has been told to fill in for, like, the black roles just because of her skin color. And then when she chooses, like, and she, I think, was talking about academia, about how then people would give her shit for being like, but we need a person of color, you should just do that. And she was like, but what if I don't like, I'm making up the show, but she was like, what if I don't like Ragtime? So now all of a sudden, because I'm a person of color, I have to audition for Ragtime? Well, you're a white person and you're not auditioning for Mamma Mia, you know, or whatever. Why the fuck do I have to? And I, that was a, not that I didn't think that those conversations had happened, but it was interesting to hear someone actually be like, well, I get shit sometimes for not auditioning. Or she was like, in Crucible, I don't always want to be Tituba. Why do I always, like, what? Okay, but I'm not allowed to be one of the other girls because this role, this, there is a black role in it. So it was, the conversations are fascinating as fuck right now. Anyway.
Well, I mean, for 5 or 6 years, I made a conscious decision to not audition for anything ethnically driven. Just because I was trying desperately to, and it's not a stigma, but it is so in certain producers' eyes that you are not as pale as I want you to be, so you're not what I want. And it has less to do with talent than it has to do with the perception of the person walking into the room versus the perception of what that person could bring to the table. And I got tired of just being handed sides because of the way I look versus, I mean, if you heard my voice, if you heard me sing, you would have a very different idea versus seeing me just as a headshot. And my resume is all over the place. Like, I've done, you know, I've done concert versions of Valjean and the Phantom. I've also played Sam in Over Here. I've played Sam in Master Harold and the Boys. And that dichotomy of, like, black characters, white characters, Latino characters, after 9/11, a lot of Middle Eastern characters, has been both a benefit as well as very trying on a career as long as I've had it. I take a lot of respect and direction from Brian Stokes Mitchell, who originated Cole Hiles Walker Jr. in Ragtime, has had a fabulous career. But he had said that, you know, I walk into a room and people don't know how to use me. It's like, is he white? Is he black? Is he Hispanic?
He also mentioned about his name, that his name does not allude to any sort of ethnicity
and
at same, all.
And that's what, and that's,
and you as well.
And that's the way I keep it. I mean, it, also, like, having in the J as an initial is also something that kind of breaks up the name. It also looks a bit like J. Pierpont Finch. You know, the kind of old world Michael J. Fox-ish type, where it's the landing of prestige, I guess, ish, for that, that people think about when you have an initial in your name. And it's helped me, honestly, because people will see that on a sheet and be like, okay, yeah, it's this guy walking in.
I do think that your middle initial does separate you sometimes. I think that your name flows easier off my tongue as Bradley J. Thomas instead of Bradley Thomas. There's something, there is something maybe a little more regal sounding about that J in there. It's working, See, I knew there'd be tangents. what is something that you were told that you couldn't do or do well that you have accomplished or in the process of accomplishing?
You know, it's just surviving as being a performer. I mean, I had a lot of, and this goes back to the whole skin tone thing. I've had a number of directors, a number of producers, even a number of fellow actors going, you'll never make it. This isn't something you should stop. It's not about talent. It's about the look. And my characters have changed over, as with all, you know, going from an ingenue to a leading man to more of a character actor. I'm still kind of bridging the leading man, character actor at the moment. You know, and 40 is not by no means old in this business. And I'm fortunate to just continue working, honestly. And whether that be doing rep shows or doing, you know, one-off charity work, you know, for like AIDS Service Foundation or things like, you know, I just did Casey Strips. And was very, very fortunate to be a part of that.
Is performing your main source of income?
Yes.
Awesome.
That and being the house manager and box office manager for The Living Room, which is going into its final season in space at the in the 1818 McGee space at the moment.
Are they going to be taking art somewhere else?
I believe so. I believe Rusty has a plan. And no matter what happens, I will still be a staunch supporter of it and still be hopefully 100%. A part of the company itself. I've been with them, I think, since their third season. Well, I acted in my first show with them, which was Titus, which was another Cal Atley show.
I think the Crossroads losing that theater space and energy sucks.
What situation or problem did TV or movies make you think would be a much bigger deal in real life?
Buying as many Cosmopolitans as Sex and the City kept on telling me to buy. I'm just like, no, I don't.
It's not my favorite beverage. Cosmos don't solve everything.
Yeah, right. It's not my favorite beverage. I've had way too many of these. Come on.
That's fair.
That's so funny. What is the best praise or advice you've received?
Being able to be in a room with my friends is the biggest gift, I think. I mean, just sitting here right now, this is a huge gift.
It's a gift to us. You came and gave an hour of your time to us.
That's right.
I'm just happy to be here.
See how that works? It's really kind of, it's cool. Everyone that has sat in this room, like, we have had one-on-one time with. And in our busy world, even if you and, like, the three of us were friends and, like, chilling at your house or something, the uninterrupted time for an hour is what I have grown to love about these couch chats. Because we're not on our phones. Yeah. There's nothing external trying to get our attention except for the three of us having conversations. So I think that shit is really fucking cool. You have one more question? Yeah. I'll end with my two. All
right. You are invisible for 24 hours. What do you do with your time? And you can arrive wherever you need. Like, you don't have to worry about the travel time being included in that 24 hours.
Teleporting is easy.
Honestly, it would be, I would love to be a fly on the wall in at, like, the big theaters, you know, just to see the process of their backstage and the way they move. I would also, you know, rob every place I could to have all the money I could, to be perfectly frank. You said invisible, not intangible, right? I can touch things.
You can touch things, yes.
Which has been some people's favorite part, because they can mess with someone.
I would do probably that a lot. I think there would probably be a lot of clearing house of places that need to be cleared. Like that. Yeah.
I love that. Well, that was almost our hour.
Yeah.
It's very quick. It always happens. Quick. Our last two questions are that I always like to ask are, is there anything that you didn't have the opportunity to say, or any words of advice or things that you would like to leave us or our listeners with today?
Always listen. Always listen. I've been in, like, rehearsal rooms or just with friends, like, in big group situations, and there are people that just don't listen. Like, they'll either talk over somebody or just continually talking while somebody is either trying to help a situation or they just need that quiet to figure out a situation. Or you can garner a lot of information from just taking a moment and listening.
Do you think you're a good listener?
Yes.
Awesome. Yes. I mean, I always love to, like, ask that, you know, sort of question. I think I'm a pretty good listener. Pretty good. There are times that the room is too loud for me to be able to listen, like, in some, just in my concentration. So there are there are times that I will go back up to someone afterward and be like, I'm sorry, I didn't really hear all of that. But at least I'm honest. Like, yeah. I will go back and be like, ugh, there's a lot of talking.
That was a lot.
There was just a lot. And then, yeah, and so my last question is, who should we have on the couch? Who would you like to hear from?
Oh. Mm-hmm. Gary Neil Johnson.
Yes.
Yes. you'll be in a room with him soon. Maybe you could tell right. him to come and...
Yes.
I'm Facebook friends with him. I can reach out to him. Gary Neil Johnson. That would be great. And mm-hmm. maybe perfect in the month of December.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He might be doing a little something.
A little something.
I mean, he might be a little busy.
This little track that he does.
But,
and what if, like, he is someone I would love to chat with. People yeah. who have to take on, like, adorn those roles year after year after mm-hmm. year in different ways, mm-hmm. too. Like, if you wouldn't have a second Mamma Mia script, but can you imagine if you came back next year and did Mamma Mia and the script was a little different? Like, and how weird that would be to be like, well, I'm still Harry. Like, yeah. I know what I got
the overarching
to do,
thing,
but all of a sudden, I'm like, right. these little in-between moments just fall pop into up.
Your muscle memory. Yeah. That you have to change. Yeah.
I love those things.
For sure.
All right. All right. Well, thank you, Bradley.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Jesus Christ Superstar goes into previews a week from when this airs.
Correct.
On October 19th. Mm-hmm. And you can get those tickets at www.theartsasylum.org/JCSKC.
Yes.
Get your tickets. We are coming at you. Bradley J. Thomas is in the show.
That's right.
And he, amongst the other 16 people, are going to make y'all eyes cry a lot of water. So get ready.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We'll see you next week when we will have on, do we know?
We don't
Did we
know,
fail
yeah.
this?
Yeah, we failed.
We
yeah.
failed that one.
Somebody else from Superstar.
Someone else from Superstar. We'll be on next week. Normally we're better than that.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that was this week's episode of Couch Chats. Thanks so much for listening. Couch Chats is available locally on KOJH 104.7 and also on iTunes. Remember, that's Couch with a K. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this episode are solely those of Couch Chats, not the Arts Asylum, KOJH, or Mutual Musicians Foundation. Thanks again for listening, and please remember to rate, review, and subscribe, as well as follow us on Instagram. Tune in next week to see who we have on the couch.